You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. Your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is the Leaf Sky Podcast. Here's your host, Jim Taddy.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, Mike Ross. Welcome to Leafs Guy, episode number 55. Where does the time go? Jim Taddy with you for the next, I want to say, 25 minutes or so. Dave McCarthy, Sirius XM, NHL Radio Network, and NHL.com is our guest. And before we get going, here's something that you should consider. The first Sunday of the NFL season is here, and the excitement continues with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the National Football League. DraftKings is giving all new customers a can't-miss offer to celebrate the return of the NFL season. Bet just $1 on any football game this weekend. Receive $200 in free bets instantly. I say just bet $1 on any football game this weekend. Receive $200 in free bets instantly, no matter what. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook is giving all new customers $200 in free bets instantly when they bet at least $1 on any football game. DraftKings, as you know, safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. It doesn't get much easier than that. And ladies and gentlemen, here is the call to action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code, what is it? THPN to receive $200 in free bets when you place a $1 bet on any week one game. The promo code is, what is it? THPN to get your free $200 in free bets instantly this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for complete details. All right, to the hockey story, and not much happening, but there is a development. It's called the Development Camp, and all NHL teams have these. It is a collection of draft picks and prospects getting set for the prospects tournament that they may be involved in, and for the Leafs, that's at Traverse City next weekend. Nick Robertson, front and center. He's the star attraction. There's no question about that. And we'll have quite a bit to say about him and what he could do. I view him, as you'll hear in this conversation with Dave McCarthy, as sort of the flex point of the entire Leaf camp. He could go a long way or not. Here is that conversation with Dave McCarthy, Sirius XM, NHL Radio Network, and NHL.com.
Dave, the development camp is starting up as we speak. Obviously, the prospects tournament the following weekend, and then on to the regular camp. Of all the names on this development camp list, is there anybody there not named Nick Robertson that could actually make an impact here?
This season at the NHL level, I would be surprised if that's the case. Rodion Amarov is not at the development camp. Right now, he's a guy that maybe at some point this year, but I still think there would be a stretch from that standpoint. Really, to me, the only name of note, if you're looking for guys that can help as soon as this year that are attending the development camp, are Nick Robertson, because he's been at the NHL level. He's had a little bit of experience, and now he's a guy that it's really important finds a way to take a step forward this season. They're relying on a guy, quite frankly, to come out of nowhere that they weren't necessarily budgeting all that much on to come in and play well above expectations. And if he could do that, that would be good. But as for the rest of the names on this list, we're talking guys that I think are still, quite frankly, years away from contending for a spot.
I kind of like this time of the year because you can't really understand how things track forward. But since we're talking about Nick Robertson, I look at this guy as a possible wild card in that he could literally turn that roster, all those roster battles on the left side, he could literally throw them up in the air if he was to make an impression in the regular camp and then evolve nicely, hoping he gets the right minutes during the regular season. He could actually play himself up into a position where he bumps somebody out, couldn't he?
Well, I think that's the hope, and he certainly has the potential to do that at some point. Look, the thing that I think is critical for teams that end up going on deep runs, long runs, is that every year you can look at their roster and you can usually find a guy, maybe sometimes two, that at the beginning of the year wasn't really even in the plans of the team, but they just played to a level where you could not put the guy on the ice, and then by the end of the year, he's an integral part of the team. Really, look no further to Nick's brother in Dallas with the Stars last year. This was a guy that they didn't really budget for at the beginning of the year. They weren't going in saying, we hope this guy is able, or you know, we expect this guy is able to produce this, this, and this. It's more, maybe he can find a way to sniff around, get a roster spot, make something happen. To the extent that he had success with the Dallas Stars last year, that was completely unaccounted for. Now, Dallas had a number of different issues, maybe not the best example, because they didn't make the playoffs, but, you know, point is they got decimated by COVID, their schedule got out of control, a lot of guys were hurt. But the point is that Nick's brother in Dallas, he had a great year. You know, you look at Tampa Bay, Ross Colton, maybe a bit better of an example, didn't have the individual season that Robertson did in Dallas, but Ross Colton was the guy that ended up playing a big impact on that team, even down the stretch and into the Cup final. So he was a guy that pushed through, and suddenly they found more depth than they might have necessarily thought they had. For the Leafs right now, I mean, you look at the holes that they have up front on that roster, and there are quite a few. There's a lot of guys in camp right now on hope contracts where, you know, you bring this guy in, the Nick Ritchies, the Andre Cashes, those type of guys where you hope they can do something, but you're really not sure if you're going to get it. If Nick Robertson can step up and say, I'm the guy who will get it done early on in camp and at the beginning of the season, well, then suddenly you've got a lot more depth than you thought you had. That's the hope for Nick Robertson. But you have to be careful not to burden the young man with too much responsibility. You got to let him find his traction and his comfort level at the NHL level first before you start looking at him and demanding production. He's not at that level yet, but he has the capability, I think, to be a guy that could steal one of those spots.
Well, Dave, to steal your line there, the Leafs have a lot of hope in their training camp roster. Most of it is based on the left side, some of it down the middle on the third and fourth lines, and there's almost a conspiracy of applicants for these jobs. I don't know exactly how it all works out, but they have strength in numbers, don't they?
Well, define strength, right? I mean, if you've got a lot of guys in camp that ultimately won't be able to get the job done, is that strength or is that just quantity? We'll see. And the answer to that question, quite frankly, is I don't know yet. But when you're in the position that the Leafs are in, where you're tight up against the cap because you got four guys taking up essentially half of your salary cap, that's the position you find yourself in where you need to essentially place bets on guys and hope that they hit. And they've done that over the last number of years, bringing in a lot of guys on 1 year deals, you know, $750, $1 million, $1.5 million, something in that range, and you hope that they hit. And quite frankly, in the last couple of years, a lot of the guys have not hit to the level that they needed. You know, Jason Spezza was really good last year. That was a hit. You know, they brought in Joe Thornton. I think that was more of a miss than a hit. They brought in Wayne Simmonds. They brought him back again this year at a 2-year deal. I think, quite frankly, last year it was more of a miss than a hit. He got hurt, not his fault, but he certainly didn't overperform his level. And that's just the fact of the matter. And they brought him back on a two-year deal, which, quite frankly, was a little surprised. Now, there's nobody who wants to be here more and have more success in Toronto than Wayne Simmonds does. But based on last year, I'm not confident it's going to happen. I know he's going to give everything he's got, but I'm not confident. He may, but I'm not confident yet. You know, and you just go down the list. You see my point, Jim? A lot of these guys they brought in, none of them really have hit. And they're trying it again this year with the Nick Ritchies and the David Camps and the Andre Cashes and those type of guys. And you know, one, if not two, and maybe throw Nick Robertson into this group as well, because he has the potential to do it. One or two of them better damn well hit, and they're going to be in a really tough spot again.
Well, I think you brought up an excellent point, Dave. I mean, we're talking generally about players that could play on the left side of the Matthews and Tavares lines, and there's a bit of a conga line there. I mean, there's many options, but I don't think we understand what happens, I guess, top to bottom. If that doesn't work out, if they can't find those players to play in those specific roles, there's no guarantee that the people that failed at those auditions could actually help the team on the bottom part of the roster either, is there?
Well, not really. I mean, throw Michael Bunting into that category as well. He's another guy in the mix, but it's the same story with him. Here's what do you think he's capable of, his ceiling, this and that, everything goes well, this is what we think. But it's all projection and hope. It's not like Edmonton, where you bring in a guy like Zach Hyman from the Leafs, right, where they needed a guy on the wing to play with McDavid or Draisaitl, and they're bringing in a guy where we know this is what we're going to get. We know we can depend on him for this. You know, there's much more assurance there. And they were in a similar position to the Leafs this year, the last number of years, where it was McDavid, Draisaitl. Okay, that's nice, but okay, who's playing with him? Well, they brought in a guy, they had to pay for him. But when you pay some money, generally you know what you're going to get. And there's assurance with Zach Hyman. The guys they brought in with the Leafs, there isn't that level of assurance right now. And, you know, the bottom of the lineup, I think you have that pretty well set. Because, look, if Andre Kasha shows that he cannot play in a top six role, you know, or Michael Bunting shows that he cannot play in a top six role, you don't really, I mean, certainly in Andre Cash's standpoint, you don't really want him in the bottom of your lineup because he's not a checker by nature, right? Like, you have the bottom of your lineup much more set with guys that are more capable of filling a checking role. Just because a guy can't play in your top six doesn't mean you put him into your bottom six. He may not be able to fill that role either. So, you know, some of the guys that they brought in, They project us like top six players. If they're not playing in an offensive position, then they can't really help you otherwise because they're not checkers by nature. Maybe Nick Ritchie has a little bit of versatility, got a bit more size. He's got to invest a little bit more in that size and be willing to show up on a nightly basis and take on some of the rigors of the game, the physicality of the game. If he can do that every night, you know, I think he'll be I don't know if weapon is the right word, but a versatile player. If he's not, well, then he's just a big guy who's floating around, staying on the outside. That's no good. You can't, like, it's not a checker, right? It's useless in the bottom six. So, again, I guess I go back to it. It's so much hope, very little assurance right now, and that's really not a confident position to me to be going into the season. When you're looking to try to contend for a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I think, you know, I guess the way to describe what they've done here is they couldn't find the big prize, so they went out and bought a bunch of little presents, and there's volume there. I don't know that, yeah. You know, I don't know how it works out. My concern would be, if it doesn't, what is plan B? Because clearly there has to be plan B. The fan base just will not accept a stumble here, and I, quite frankly, I don't think the ownership will either, so kind of precarious that way. And what I find intriguing is, you know, we'll talk quite a bit about the left side and what they're going to do, but then there's that third line center position, and Alex Kerfoot sort of floats above the roster looking for a place to land, and everybody has Kampfen at the third line center, but his description is really of a fourth line center, isn't it?
Well, I think David Kampfen is the guy they want to turn into a Philippe Danault sort, so to speak, from Montreal, a guy that takes on a lot of heavy minutes, frees up some of their more offensive players to play in more offensive situations, not have to burden a John Tavares or an Austin Matthews with that type of assignment. And I kind of get it. That's why why Los Angeles paid handsomely for Philippe Danault, because they want to unburden Anze Kopitar. Luke Robitaille told me this flat out on my show earlier in the summer. That's why they went out and got Philippe Danault. They wanted to unburden Anze Kopitar from having to play in a defensive role, and they feel that in doing so, it'll help solve some of their scoring woes. Kings were 27th last year in goals. Not having to burden Kopitar, they feel will allow him to score more. So I think that's what the Leafs are looking for out of David Kemp. Alex Kerfoot has been tried in that role. I don't think he really is a guy that can play in that role effectively. And if David Kemp is able to solidify it, again, you wonder, does a guy like Alex Kerfoot become expendable on the roster? I mean, I think you could make the argument that already you wonder if he is, just by the nature of the contract that he carries. Problem is, it's difficult to divest yourself of a contract like that right now in this league. So I think ideally that's the role that they'd like David Kemp to fill in. And I think the approach from management standpoint is that they feel he will be capable of taking on those minutes. Whether or not he's able to do so, that remains to be seen. But when you look down the lineup at the fourth line, I mean, Adam Brooks was the guy that I thought of all of the fourth line centers that were auditioned at times last year. I thought he was relatively effective in that role. So, you know, is Adam Brooks capable of elevating in the lineup? Not so sure from a defensive standpoint. I think that's why they're pretty high on David Kemp. And then if Kemp solidifies that, what does that mean for Pierre Engvall, a guy that was sort of tried in the third line center role at times last year? And quite frankly, I wasn't blown away. So I think David Kemp could be a real wild card in all of this. If he solidifies that position, does that then make Kerfoot and potentially Pierre Engvall expendable? If you could move those contracts, could you free yourself up for some flexibility elsewhere? I do think David Kemp is a real wild card in all of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a developing story. I mean, you could look at the sample size that each one of these new players brings, and quite frankly, it's not very deep, but that doesn't mean anything. You don't know, because when they're on the Leafs, they have a specific role to play and a sort of a specific path to develop into. Now, that's not for everybody, but if it all works out, I would concur that with you that, you know, that's great for the Leafs, not so great for Alex Kerfoot. At some point, there's a trade here, right?
Well, I mean, look, Alex Kerfoot, the player, you have a use for him. At that money, you don't. And, like, that's what you run into in a salary cap league. Look at the Minnesota Wild this past year. They still like the player that Ryan Suter was, but not at that money anymore. And that's why they came to the point where they decided to buy both him and Zach Parise out. Parise's play had eroded to the point where he was not nearly worth the money. Suter, you had a role for, but not at that money. Alex Kerfoot, I think, is a similar situation right now. At $3.5 million, you know, if he can't play in a defensive role, he's not a guy that really can play in a top six spot on the wing. It's just too expensive on this roster. You need to allocate that money elsewhere. But, you know, like I said, who is going to take a contract right now, $3.5 million for another 2 years, for a guy who's probably not a top six winger and isn't really a checker? It's not a great contract. It's a problem that the Leafs have right now on their hands, really through no fault of anyone but their own, for bringing Kerfoot in and then signing him immediately to that deal before I think they really understood what it was that they had.
Well, let's play devil's advocate here. I mean, if that is the case, and I'm not going to argue with you, it's got nothing to do with Alex Kerfoot, the hockey player. It's the salary hit. So, I mean, if that was something that you wanted to get done in the summer, then why would you then trade to Pittsburgh for a player that you would lose in the expansion draft when you had the guy that you could have lost in the expansion draft anyway?
Well, that brings back another argument. I find that whole situation with Jared McCann to be a little bit puzzling, to be honest with you. Kyle Dubas' justification was that essentially we just lost a draft pick in the expansion draft, which spoke to the desire to essentially run the band back out for another go at it, Alex Kerfoot included. you know, if they weren't going to lose, the fear was that they may lose at Travis Dermott if that was the case. But, you know, ultimately, would they have taken Dermott and not Kerfoot? But because McCann was there, they shifted their interest from Dermott to McCann. I mean, it's hard to know. The only person who'll ever know the answer to that is Ron Francis. But that may be what would have happened, because if you look at the trend that Seattle worked with, it was that cap space is king. And they did not take on very many players with a great deal of money in terms, certainly contracts that you would look at as bad contracts in the expansion draft. So they may well have taken Dermott, and I don't think the Leafs wanted to lose Travis. So it was their hedge, well, we'll bring in McCann, and perhaps that is a guy that sort of shifts their attention elsewhere. That turned out to be the case. But I do still find that situation to be a little bit puzzling.
Just on the way out, as an overview type question, Dave, to end the conversation, I mean, this team will hit camp with a lot of question marks. There's no question about that. There's the, appearance that the window isn't necessarily closing, but the tolerance is. And that's in the fan base. And you don't know exactly how the top level of ownership feels about this, but there doesn't seem to be another first-round exit in anybody's wheelhouse here. So, I mean, the fact that they're going with so many question marks, isn't that problematic?
Oh, it's hugely problematic, but it goes back to the situation they put themselves in. What other way could they have gone into the season? The only way they could have gone into the season with sort of a different set of circumstances was to make the decision this off-season that it was time to break up the band, so to speak, and move along one of the guys that they consider to be in their top four core of forwards. Well, Kyle Dubas decided that he wanted to give it one more run at it. So if you're not going to divest yourself of one of those big salaries, it goes back to what we talked earlier about, you didn't have the opportunity really to reallocate money to strengthen around the edges. So they wanted to, that was essentially the fundamental decision that this management group made, was to kick the can down the road one more year and see if something could be put together. Look, if John Tavares doesn't get hurt in the first round against Montreal, do they end up finding a way to win that series and not surrendering a 3-1 series lead? Who knows, but their chances of doing so would have increased dramatically. And then, okay, so they get into the second round. Could they have found a way to handle the Winnipeg Jets, like Montreal did? Maybe. And then you find yourself in the third round, and then suddenly you consider that a disappointment or a big step forward last year. And then the mindset, the sentiment coming into this season is, oh, well, they finally took a step forward. That was great. Big step in their development. Now let's see what they can do. Now they go, you know what I mean? It changes on a whim and for maybe just an incident as isolated as the John Tavares injury. It's hindsight. We'll never really know, but it's amazing how one little thing could really fully have altered the mindset. I don't necessarily disagree with coming back at this with this group for one more kick at the can. But what I will say is, if this season ends in disappointment or disaster again, be that an early exit or, heaven forbid, not making the playoffs, I don't see much appetite, certainly amongst the fan base or likely even ownership as well, to continue down this road with the roster as it's contrived.
Last minute of play in this podcast.
All right, there's the time warning from PA announcer Mike Ross. So let's play a little yes guy, no guy. The Leafs forward depth, do you like it? Oh, yes guy, there's all kinds of possibilities there. The Leafs blue line, is it deep enough? Oh, yes guy, all kinds of possibilities there. And Leafs goaltending, do you like it? Yes guy, I just think it'll work out. Mrazek and Jack Campbell should be a nice tandem. Now, the ultimate yes guy, no guy, will it all work out? Well, don't know guy. This is going to be an interesting run. And as we said in our conversation with Dave McCarthy, maybe not too perplexed about what happens during the regular season, but it cannot fail. Don't want to be around if that happens. We'll see, won't we? Hope you enjoyed Leafs Guy episode 55, and hope you come back next week for Leafs Guy episode 56.